Welcome to On Spec, where you'll hear stories that bring you closer to the globe. I'm your host, Ferry Banawa. In this season, we're taking you on a deep dive to discover how fake news impacts ordinary people. You saw how election disinformation led to the storming of the U.S. Capitol building in early January, so you know how crucial it is that we understand why people believe the fake news. It wasn't just to give another platform to those spewing hatred. OnSpec went to 7 countries to meet people on both sides of the information divide. In Turkey, Russia, Brazil, India, Hong Kong, the U.S., and the Congo. The journalists met the truth-tellers fighting back against disinformation, and they got to know people who absolutely agree with the fake news. Our team of freelance reporters spent time with individuals on opposing sides. Then they convinced them to talk to each other face-to-face. Our first story is from Turkey. Photojournalist Özge Sebzeci travels with Syrian refugees determined to cross to Europe in the midst of a Turkish fake news campaign that the border to Greece is open.
On a clear Tuesday, in Fatih, Istanbul, I watch a man selling tickets for a bus to the Greek border. Fatih is home to Turkey's famed Hagia Sophia and Blue Mosque. But Fatih is also a hub for migrants from countries like Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, and many others. For most, it's a pit stop on their long journey to Europe, and that's why they're here today. There are young men carrying only a backpack and traveling alone. Groups of women traveling together, and families too. Parents carrying toddlers, packing blankets, food and water. They load onto a dozen multicolored buses and head for the border. Watching all of this makes me think of my family's migration journey. In the 1970s, my mother's family also crossed this border, but in the opposite direction. They were fleeing socialist Romania because they wanted to come back to their Muslim roots in Turkey. Back then, the Soviets tried to prevent people from leaving, and many died trying. When my family and others like them arrived to Turkey, they were welcomed. Nothing like what migrants experience today. Migrants are vilified in Turkish politics and media. Many say they are sick of hosting refugees, and that frustration leads to a lot of disinformation. I wanted to see for myself what this journey to Europe looks like and who is taking part. I get in one of the buses and began talking to a family of Syrians traveling together. I asked one of them what they told the children about this trip.
We give them candies and biscuits and told them we are going to the village. We told them we will go and have picnic by the river.
But this is anything but a picnic.
Çok memnunuz devletten de. Ama bir dönemi var yani. Bugün 9 yıl oluyor yaklaşık.
Bir saniye. Şey, isminiz neydi önce?
İsa. İsa Ramazan.
Evet. Kaç yaşındasınız?
45 yaş.
İsa Ramazan is 45 and came to Turkey 9 years ago from Aleppo, Syria when the war started. He lives in a Syrian-Turkish border town called Gaziantep with his wife and 4 children. On this trip, he is with his oldest child, Ahmet, who is 22. His wife and the other children stayed in Gaziantep because İsa doesn't have enough money to bring them yet. The group paid about 3,000 Turkish liras or $500 for this trip. That's more than what İsa makes in a month. For years, İsa was able to find work on and off, even without a legal work permit. But in 2019, Turkish authorities started enforcing the law and his work stopped. That makes it a lot harder for İsa and other Syrians to survive in Turkey. This is his second attempt to leave. 6 months ago, he paid a smuggler to go to Greece, but Turkish soldiers caught him on the way. He spent 3 days in detention before being released. Now he is here, trying again.
We will sleep in the cold tonight, and we will wait. I hope we can pass easily.
So, how did İsa and others get here? A few days before, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdoğan appeared on TV with an announcement. Turkey's borders to Europe were open. That speech was the boiling point of a long battle between Erdoğan and EU leaders about how to deal with migrants. There are roughly 4 million refugees and migrants in Turkey, the largest population in the world. They can't go back to war-torn Syria or Afghanistan, and most don't want to stay in Turkey either. But the Turkish government has so far prevented them from going to Europe. In exchange, the EU offered 6 billion euros, but by 2020, it had only paid out about 3 billion. And it's about more than refugees and money. Turkey has been taking sides, fighting in the Syrian war itself. That came to a head in February last year, when Russian and Syrian airstrikes killed dozens of Turkish soldiers in Idlib, the last stronghold of Turkish-backed rebels in Syria. Turkey's NATO allies did not come down on the Syrian regime or Russia for the strikes.
Telefon telefon üstüne gelmeye başladı. Telefon telefon üstüne gelmeye başladı.
Erdoğan had been threatening to open the Turkish borders for a long time. Last March, he finally did it.
Sizler bu yükten nasibinizi alacaksınız.
Now, you get your share of this burden, he says.
22 zırhlı araç. 45.
Tens of thousands of people rushed to the Greek border after the government announced it was open. But there was a catch. Even though Turkish officials were letting people leave, Greece wasn't letting people in. Many migrants knew the Greek side was closed, but went anyway. They wanted to try their luck and get out of Turkey while the offer was still on the table. Back on the bus with İsa, we get close to the border and police stop us at a checkpoint at the border town of Edirne. I have good memories from Edirne because it's my father's hometown. We came here for holidays to visit my father's family. The town is named after a 500-year-old stone bridge. On one side is Turkey, on the other, Greece. The bus driver tells a Syrian man to calm the passengers down and not to speak all at once. He says the bus is very close to the Evros River, and to reach Greece, they have to ride in a boat for 5 minutes in shallow water. Another refugee from Syria translates in Arabic. Then the group begins quarreling. We move past the checkpoint and enter the village. By now, it's pitch dark outside. The driver tells the passengers to get off. This is where they will cross. Everyone is scared. Some women and children start to cry. The passengers continue to argue with each other. I sit next to the bus driver and encourage everyone to calm down. A Turkish commander gets on the bus. He says the Greek police are blocking most of the border, But there is a small canal that's unguarded. He explains what happens once they make it to Greek shores.
If you walk until the morning, you will arrive at the Hungarian border. There is no other way to cross.
Actually, the Hungarian border is three countries away, maybe a 10-day walk. İsa, the Syrian from Aleppo we met earlier, speaks up. İsa says there are children in the group and asks to be dropped off in Edirne instead.
No way! You can only go back to Istanbul. The government gave you permission for a week. You could cross until the end of the week. If not, all the migrants will be deported.
A blonde woman asks if they are gonna have to cross the river. She's scared of drowning.
Lady, what do you want? Do you think they are waiting for you with flowers in their hands on the other side?
As the argument continues, the translator asks again if there is somewhere else to cross by land. The commander keeps telling them no. He says there are only two options now: cross to Greece here or go back. Another soldier shouts, Greece or Istanbul?
Ya Istanbul!
Ya Istanbul!
Ya Istanbul! Ya da Yunanistan! Durmak yok! Yolda durma! Ya Istanbul, ya Turan!
But crossing means risking death on a dinghy boat in the pitch black, facing armed Greek soldiers. For the passengers on the bus that night, the risk was just too high. We all went back to Istanbul that night.
Nehri geçtikten sonra olanları duymuyoruz.
Don't you think we see the river? Don't you think we know what will happen after crossing the river? There are gangs there with guns waiting to rob us. Then why are you sending us there?
Two days after I met İsa on the bus, Turkish Interior Minister Süleyman Soylu said on Twitter that 135,000 refugees had left Turkey. But he didn't say the most were stuck in no man's land. Greek soldiers stopped them from crossing. They were robbed and beaten. One Pakistani migrant was allegedly shot and killed by Greek forces. This is sound captured by an Afghan refugee who is still on Turkish soil on the border. He says the Greeks are shooting straight at them. Neither Greece nor Turkey wanted to own up to their actions. Instead, they accused each other of lies and propaganda. So where does this leave the refugees caught in the middle? İsa believes that if enough migrants and refugees fill the border, eventually, Europe will open its doors. But that's just wishful thinking. Many, like İsa, returned to Istanbul. Thousands of others spent weeks in a makeshift camp near Edirne, the place I remember fondly as a child. For these refugees will become an awful memory. So, what do Turks think about the refugees today? Migration is one of the most disputed issues in Turkish elections and in daily conversation. And with that comes a lot of disinformation. In 2018, Reuters identified Turkey as one of the top 10 countries most exposed to fake news.
Sığınmacı gençler, tosunlar olarak adlandırdığınız.
Gürbüz Türkçe sözlüğe göre. Gürbüz delikanlılar.
Gençler üniversiteye sınavsız mı giriyorlar?
This is an anti-migration politician from the far right on a centrist news program. He's telling the host that Syrians can get into Turkish universities without passing an admissions exam. This is not true.
Tüp bebek için Suriyelilere her türlü masrafı Suriyelilerin karşılanıyormuş devlet hastanelerinde.
This was the most watched news host in Turkey. He's saying that Syrians can get free fertility treatments while Turks have to pay. This, of course, is also not true. Tek bir kuruş dahi alınmıyor diyor. Bu adaletsizlik değil mi diye sorar. The thing is, Turks welcomed Syrians at first, but that changed as the Syrian war dragged on. These days, 82% of Turks want Syrians to go back home. This issue was at the forefront of the 2019 local municipal elections. But there is a small population of Turks who support migrants.
My name is Kadir.
My name is Abdul Kadir.
Abdul Kadir.
Abdul Kadir. I'm from here. Okay. I'm living in Istanbul.
Okay. I met Kadir Bal in a bustling Istanbul neighborhood in May 2020. He's a volunteer with a community aid organization called Tarlabaşı Solidarity Group. That day, he was introducing himself to two refugee men from Sierra Leone who live in Istanbul.
Freetown, yes, Motorrad, FSG.
This was almost 2 months after the first COVID-19 case hit Turkey. By the spring, health officials were reporting about 2,000 cases a day. The Turkish government forced migrants to leave the Greek border as cases began to rise. And when lockdowns came down across the country, migrants, who often live day to day, were hardest hit. This is why Kadir sprang into action.
Flying and taking photo and then Distance.
He's trying to keep a social distance, but it's hard because of the crowds. Kadir's 35 years old and usually works at a textile shop. But since the pandemic, he's dedicated himself to helping people in need. The aid group he's a member of gives migrants a prepaid card to buy food and pay bills. Kadir studied in public schools, infused with Turkish nationalism.
Since I was 7 years old, I grew up with my Kemalist teachers, teaching me official history that all the world is against Turkey. All the countries around us are enemies. Everybody stabs us in the back. Everybody betrayed us. So normally, we don't like the people that are foreign to us. Our teachers didn't sow the seeds of love toward others. We were being taught that we threw the Greeks in the sea, we were betrayed by Arabs, and Kurdish people are always separatists.
But Kadir realized there was another side to the story. So he chose to help people other Turks might consider enemies.
In the last 12-13 years, I formed a friendship with homeless people. People without families. People separated from their families. Drug addicts, street kids. I owe my real learning process to the streets.
Modern Turkey's biggest ethnic divide has been between Kurds and Turks. Tensions flared years ago during a mass exodus, when Kurds were forced out or left their traditional villages to live in big cities. They weren't allowed to speak their language, and they were imprisoned. And that's still happening. Kadir first understood the divide when he was a kid.
Although I am Turkish, I was beaten for the first time because I was mistaken for a Kurd. When I asked them, why are you beating me? They said it is enough to be Kurdish to get beaten. And some of my distant relatives were among those who beat me.
Kadir says they thought he was Kurdish because he had lived in Urfa, a Kurdish-majority town. But getting beaten helped him empathize with Kurds and what their lives were like. Kadir began to feel a sense of obligation toward those in need, no matter what their religion or nationality. Now, Turks have another enemy on the list, the refugees. Kadir wants to help change that. As we are talking to men from Sierra Leone, Kadir says hello to a Turkish family next door. The mother, Dilber, asks a question.
What will happen to these Arabs? This place is full of them. Won't they go back to their countries?
Miss Dilber, these guys here are from Africa and they are not here to settle down.
We get angry. Our country is in turmoil. We feel like we can't breathe here. But on the other side, when we see their bad living conditions as Muslim people, we feel for them. There is this side of things as well.
You are thinking what would happen if there's a constant influx of migrants without any plan?
Exactly.
Sister, you are a resident of this neighborhood. Have you ever run into any disturbance caused by the migrants?
No, no, I can't lie. They have never caused a disturbance. Instead, they've been very good.
Kadir may convince his neighborhood to sympathize with refugees, but there are forces much bigger than him preaching against them. The powerful in Turkey openly provoke resentment against refugees. Sometimes they list legitimate concerns, not just disinformation. For example, one thing that bothers me is that some of the refugees are adding to a conservative culture that can stand for patriarchy and against secularism. To say the debate is simply about being for or against refugees oversimplifies the ambiguous feelings many Turks have. I met İlay Aksoy, trying to understand all those nuances.
Welcome to Fatih. My name is İlay Aksoy and I'm the mayor candidate for the municipality council of Fatih.
İlay made this video when she was running for mayor of Fatih. That's the same district I boarded the bus with refugees in Istanbul. Syrians and other Arabs are the most visible there. Some signs are in Arabic. İlay ran as a candidate for the Good Party, an opposition party she co-founded. One of the party's harshest criticisms against the ruling government is that refugees are allowed to stay in Turkey.
The government has tried to adapt to them instead of getting the Syrians to adapt to the Turkish society.
İlay's campaign platform was about how the government was too soft on the migrants, especially Syrians. She vowed to eliminate all the Arabic signposts in Fatih and put up banners that said,
I used the sentence, I will not hand over Fatih to Syrians, because literally it was a very deep sociological problem that must be attended.
You are listening to a video İlay shared last November. We see a Syrian man shooting a gun from the window of a running car. On Twitter, she posts videos that show Syrians being violent in Turkey. She is afraid of more extremism. İlay insists that she is not racist, but logical. And her views on migration are shaped by the negative impact it's having on Turkey.
I come from an immigrant background myself. I grew up in Australia. I'm very fortunate that I grew up in Australia, but at the end, I'm Turkish. And Australia has given me a lot of good things. But right now, I feel, as a Turkish person, that my country needs me more here. I'm a very nationalistic person.
İlay has a warm smile and smart business look. She has fond memories of her life in Australia as an immigrant where she spent 16 years. She says she felt welcomed but had to integrate into Australian society, learning English and spending time with different cultures. She had a comfortable life in Sydney, but she missed Turkey.
I think Turkey, this is the time that Turkey really needs people that want Turkey to go ahead, to go forward, to protect its secular society, to protect the republic.
At 21, she returned to Istanbul. She eventually married and had a daughter and son. İlay started a textile export business and it was doing well until the 2008 economic crisis. When her business shut down, she joined politics, first with the Republican People's Party, a secular party and the main opposition to Erdogan's AK Party, then with the Good Party.
So it was a need to change that brought me into politics, and it was my belief that change must be done through diplomacy.
İlay says she is not opposed to all migration, but she is opposed to Syrian migration. Many people would say that makes her anti-Arab. But her ideas tap into a collective fear among Turks that our secular values are at risk. The government is already trying to impose more conservative policies on Turkish society. Many fear the Islamic Arab culture will make that worse.
The problem is that Turkey has always been a country where refugees come and refugees go. But and none of the refugees up to now has created such a major problem as the Syrians. You cannot turn over the Turkish society to an Arab nation. It doesn't work that way.
İlay lost the district mayoral election in Fatih. The ruling AK Party incumbent won. And in October 2020, pro-refugee organizations filed a complaint against İlay in court for hate speech and discrimination. After spending time with both Kadir and İlay, I asked them to talk to each other online. I would moderate. I had no idea how things would go down.
Yani şey başlangıç olarak tabii ki böyle ilk başa döndüğümüzde Türkiye.
What was your reaction when refugees from Syria started coming to Turkey?
Şimdi sorunuz şuydu, sınır ülke olduğunu hani.
There was a civil war in our border and there was a humanitarian problem. So of course that's why Turkey should get involved and that's why we should support the people that took refuge in our country. But there are some major mistakes here. The first one is, when Turkey accepted these people, it didn't come up with a settlement policy. How many people can we take in? How many people can we take care of? What will be the cost to the nation?
Ülkemize sığınan insanlara destek vermesi gerekiyordu.
Bu savaşın şu ana kadar durduğumuz yer açısından.
It is clear that this war has no benefit for Turkey, neither for the people who have come here nor for Syria. I think that we are part of this war in this sense. Moreover, I think that Turkey has a serious role in the devastating consequences of this war, although it hasn't really calculated or anticipated those consequences. I am also suffering as a Turkish citizen.
At this point, I reminded İlay that she told me she sympathized with the human impact of the refugee crisis initially. I asked how her opinion changed when more refugees arrived through the years.
My views have changed a lot because I've realized this. When the AK Party government made a migration agreement with the European Union, the government tried to make these people permanent in an institutional way. And they tried to shift the perception of the Turkish people to accept it. They did this in a very dishonest way, actually. The local governments offered opportunities so that Syrians were able to advance, be encouraged, root themselves and expand literally everywhere.
In Turkey, similar things have been said for a long time about Kurdish people. For instance, I'm from Mersin. When I was a child, I took part in an NGO survey about Kurdish neighborhoods in Mersin. We were asked questions about people's birth rate, their education, and whether they would return to their hometowns. But the real fuss over these questions was whether Kurdish people would come to Western Turkey from Eastern Turkey. There was a panic over whether they will take over all the Western cities. They will be rooted there, and that Western cities would become Kurdish majority. Right now, we see there are the same concerns for Syrian people. People fear that Turkey would become Arabized. That's the approach.
Kadir is against this mindset. He's not afraid of Arabs taking over Turkey. He thinks this fear is overblown and essentially racist.
I want to underline the danger of Syrians becoming Turkish as much as we underline the danger of Turkey becoming more like Syria. For instance, the children we meet in the field don't speak Arabic. They grew up here and they got used to it here. They became more like Turkish people. For instance, some Syrian kids get teased by Turkish kids when they bring Syrian bread to the school. And these kids become traumatized and they try to act like a Turk and conceal their Syrian identity. So if Turkey feels threatened by the Syrian presence, the Syrians feel like their identity is threatened by assimilating in Turkey.
İlay doesn't address Kadir's concerns, but agrees that refugees are being used as pawns.
Birçok bugün özel hastanelerimiz çünkü.
So today, a lot of private hospitals take care of Syrians without charging anything. Education is completely free. Our muhtars and district governors are providing social aid.
Sosyal yardım zaten muhtarlarımız, kaymakamlarımız aracılığıyla veriliyor.
This isn't entirely true. Muhtars are elected neighborhood representatives. And it's true that some cash incentives are given to help with basic needs. But There is disinformation in Turkish media that these cash handouts are big chunks of money, when in reality, most cash and services have been cut for refugees. What Eli doesn't mention is that Syrians have also helped the Turkish economy by spending and being consumers. Instead, she points out the class divide between Syrians.
Rich Arab businessmen got their citizenship for $250,000. These people employ Syrians with them illegally and they don't employ any Turks. So a society within a society is clearly being created here.
So yes, rich Syrians started their businesses and they employ poor Syrians with them. But Turkish people do much worse. They only employ Syrians, Uzbeks, Turkmens, Iranians, whoever they find in our country as cheap labor. This corruption, this capitalism has been spread to everyone.
Eli and Kadir agree that if Syrians continue to live here, they have to be documented and given the right to work. But really, Eli prefers that Syrians just return to Syria.
Of course we should talk about problems that are affecting us because of migration. But also, we should talk about the violence, sexual harassment, threats, exploitation towards migrants that we are responsible for. And that's exactly what we don't talk about in Turkey.
I agree with you, but people don't really know why all these people have come here. They don't really comprehend it. They don't really understand or know why we should take care of all these people.
Bilmiyoruz. Neden biz bu insanlara bakmak zorundayız? Bilmiyoruz. Çünkü UNICEF'in verilerine göre,
according to UNICEF statistics, there are 1,750,000 Syrian children in Turkey, and only 650,000 of them are studying in school. 1 million children are growing up without receiving any kind of formal education. A lot of these children don't have IDs because they were born in Turkey. Yes, they have temporary IDs, but they don't have citizenship. But if they were born in Syria, they would be able to study in their own country. Their rights to education was taken away from them. And then these people go out in the streets, there is a society that tells them, why are you here?
İşte siz niye buradasınız diyen bir toplum.
Sizler gibi bu tür dolu dolu çalışma yapan.
Kadir cuts in here and says solving these issues requires hardworking politicians like Eli. But if she's talking about violence perpetrated by Syrians, he says she should also tackle the violence perpetrated by everyday Turks to migrants. Kadir points out the parallel between Turkey and Germany. Turks went to Germany after World War II when Germany had a shortage of labor. Their population there is in the millions today. But now the far right in Germany is lashing out at Turkish communities with many of the same arguments Turks used against refugees.
Turks who emigrated to Germany could hardly become 3.5 million in 50 years. So I don't think Syrians would capture Turkey. I don't think Turkey would Arabize. I don't think it would happen. Because if it would be like that, Germany's far right and anti-Turkish politics would have been right. But it isn't. What are they saying? We won't surrender Germany to Turkish people. But are we going to Germany to take them hostage? No. We are going there to do their menial jobs.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but there is an important factor here. Turkish people got the right to citizenship after a very long time in Germany. Syrians were able to get citizenship very early in Turkey.
Because they were used as a political tool, as a weapon here against Europe.
And they got the right to vote with the citizenship. And in this election, there were special brochures printed in Arabic for the Syrians. Special election campaigns were made for them. And we've seen that their votes have made considerable changes against us. So after all, our uneasiness is not paranoia, it's virtual reality.
Eli says that the ruling AK Party has used refugees to get more votes.
I understand your uneasiness. I said this in the first place and I agree with you. But we always act as if we are in trouble. Yes, maybe we are in trouble, but we also cause trouble to others. We should first sweep our own doorstep before dirtying others, putting the blame on others. I'm sorry if I made mistakes, but I am very pleased with this meeting. We would be happy if you would come to spend time in the field with us one day. We will be happy to host you.
Me too. With pleasure.
İlay and Kadir may not agree on everything, but their meeting did make one thing clear. The limbo migrants in Turkey find themselves in just isn't working. How to solve that is a question that will dominate Turkish politics for years to come. And that debate will be further fueled by disinformation and fake news. Still, I want to think there is a way out for refugees like Isa, the Syrian refugee we met at the beginning of this story. This is the last voice message he left me on WhatsApp.
Vallahi Yunanistan'a bir daha
denedim. I tried to cross to the Greek side and I got caught again. I tried one more time, I got caught again. I don't know what to do. May God enlighten my path.
And when I checked my phone, I saw that hate messages against Syrians were trending one more time on Turkish Twitter. For On Spec, this is Özge Sebzeci in Istanbul.
You just heard our first story from On Spec's third season. If you liked it, keep tuning in and give us your feedback on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It took a hard-working team to make this episode happen. This story was produced by Oscar Duran, edited by me, Alisa Resnick, Omar Farouk, Tony Cross, and Farah Mokhtarizadeh. Thanks for doing the voiceovers, Shadi Turk as Isa, Mehdi Özyıldız as Kadir, Eli Aksoy did her own, Sera Akcan as Dilbar, Tutko Efe as the commander. Special thanks to Ozan Tekin and Christian Filan in Frame 34. Thanks to the National Geographic Society for funding the episode. Join us next and we'll take you to Moscow, where reporter Theo Mers will tell you what it's like to be gay in Russia as state media spews fake news about LGBTs. And here's to 2021.